I am your host, Jameson Smallwood, and this is the Culture and Conversations podcast. What an episode that we have planned for you. I got to talk about this unspeakable tragedy I saw this week. Burnt Dutch apple pies. And one of my favorite stores to shop in of all places too. Also, what is going on with the Winter Olympics? And why should I watch any of it? Our conversation that we had lined up. We had the privilege of speaking with Hope Williams, licensed professional counselor with the Smile Project Support Services. She's a good friend from Georgia Southern University, the Georgia Southern University, and she has several events coming up in the near future that you guys need to pay attention to and be on the lookout for. We had a great conversation about dealing with grief, and she helps children in our community and the larger community deal with the loss of loved ones. She shares her story and what got her inspired to become a grief counselor. Let's go. Culture and Conversations podcast. Let's get it. Yes, I am your host, Jameson Smallwood, and this is the Culture and Conversations podcast. And I am so happy to be able to talk with you, share my ideas, my thoughts. Remember, this is my social media stewed down into audible format. So anything that you would see on my social media, if you followed me, if you were a part of that inner friend circle, you may hear it on the podcast. This week, I had a lot going on. So I had to do a bunch of different errands for some different events that we had going on in my church. I'm involved in a lot of stuff at the church, and I had some programs that were in flight, some things that I was helping to sponsor. And so I was running a bunch of errands, and I had to grab some food. So I went to the grocery store that I always go to. Anybody who knows me, they know what grocery store this is. And I won't mention their name because this isn't necessarily the most flattering conversation that I'm about to engage in, but I went to the grocery store, and I took a trip down their bakery aisle, where they have all of their custom in-house products like pies and cakes and cookies and all these great desserts that they bake in-house. And what caught my eye that had me just floored was these burnt Dutch apple pies. And if you know anything about pies and Dutch apple pies, they have like a crumb on top, a streusel, if you will, on top. And it was completely burnt. And I'm not talking about just one pie or two pies. I'm talking about every Dutch apple pie they had was burnt. And what amazed me is that someone actually put this out on the table and thought people were going to be inclined to buy these burnt apple pies. And it's just amazing to me that when I see businesses not being sensitive to quality standards. You know, that to me is the thing that always amazes me is that as a customer, when I come to your business, I shouldn't see your slip hanging. That's a Southern colloquialism I shouldn't see things not quite right and out of place or issues behind the scenes. I should just see product that's compelling to buy, or at least staged appropriately that makes that for the people who want to buy. You know, I mean, I'd be looking for an apple pie, but when I see that type of thing, when I see a burnt Dutch apple pie and every pie that you have is burnt, and I'm just thinking to myself, that's complete incompetence. And I was just curious because I've never seen those pies at that location or at that store really looking great. So I went online to see what their version of a Dutch apple pie is supposed to look like. And sure enough, it looks like a wonderful, delicious pie on the website, on the image on the website, but not so much in the store. And I just was amazed at how someone could miss that, you know, as a manager for the store. How do you walk down the bakery aisle and see that and say that that's appropriate? And these are the things that, unfortunately, people have allowed themselves to sort of devolve into, because people just don't have that same passion for doing a good job that they used to have, it seems. And I'm sure that in every generation, there always have been people who did questionable and suspect work. But it just seems like now, more so now, people are just content with things being just sort of ugh. And no one is taking accountability. Nobody's taking ownership. And I don't know. Some people say, well, man, they don't get paid enough to make sure that those pies aren't burnt. But for me, on a personal level, I just can't live with that kind of work. And I think this comes from how I was raised with my father. Even when me and my brother would do a great job helping my dad, he wouldn't tell us it was a great job. He'd just be like, okay, you did what you were supposed to do. You know, I don't think there's any such thing in his book, and in being from that generation, you know, I don't think there's such thing as a quote unquote great job. There's just, hey, that's what's expected. The best is always what's expected. So, you know, and that just bothered me because I saw those pies and I'm thinking to myself, man, you know, that's a reflection. If you have something looking like that on your shelf, telling people that, hey, this is what we're selling you, that's a reflection of the people who are doing work for you. That's a reflection of your management. And ultimately, that's a reflection of what you think about me as a customer, that I'm not discerning enough with how I spend my money and where I spend my money to actually put up with that kind of service. And it just makes me upset, because, you know, I deserve a good product if I'm willing to pay for it. That's how capitalism works. I deserve the best that I'm willing to pay for. If I have the money and they make a product that is appropriate in value, I should be able to get it based on what I'm willing to pay for it. And it's just amazing to see people just sort of, you know, just go about things in a half-hearted way. And it just creates these problems that we don't need in our society. But, you know, that's just my take on it. Once again, take all of these opinions, these strong opinions, as if they're being weakly held. So they're not being held very strongly. So I think also something else that caught my eye this week was I took a look at the Winter Olympics. Now, growing up as a kid, I used to love watching the Olympics. And I'm talking about the Summer Olympic Games. And you know, I live in the metro Atlanta area. So in 1996, the Olympics came here to Atlanta, which was awesome, you know, and it really did a lot for the economy locally here in terms of spurring on growth and creating a population explosion as industry and people moved into Atlanta and in the surrounding Atlanta cities and metropolitan area. And I love watching the Olympics as a kid, the Summer Olympics. So the Summer Olympics were always the games that, you know, I grew up watching. But in between the Olympics, because the Olympics, you know, the Summer Olympics, just like the Winter Olympics, happen every 4 years, I wanted to watch something else in between. So every 2 years I got a chance to see, or every 4 years I got a chance to see the Winter Olympics as well. And you know, growing up as a kid in South Georgia, the Winter Olympics really didn't appeal to me because it's the winter games. We don't get a winter that's even close to being something where we could play and have sport in like these people on TV, you know, would do. And I watched the Winter Olympics because it was competition, and I enjoy watching competition, especially skill competition. And you don't see any better competition in the world than watching, you know, the Olympics, whether it's the Summer or the Olympic or the Winter Games. But the Winter Games are just bad. I watched them last night as an adult, and they're just bad. Now, there's some other reasons why I could go into them being bad, but let's just say that the Winter Olympics, they're just not marketed to me. You know, I was watching one event, and I won't mention the event or why I had issue with the event, but let's just say the event was not targeted to my demographic, that being a man of my age, right? A younger middle-aged man. Just wasn't targeted to my demographic. And then also I started looking at the other events and the other activities and that they had going on. And those, while those were interesting, you know, like the speed skating and they had some event where they were shooting. So that kind of caught my eye too, because I enjoy going to the shooting range and stuff like that. And those things were cool. But then I realized why I don't like the Winter Olympics. The thing that makes sport so engaging as you grow up as a kid and into a young man or into an adult is that sport offers everybody the illusion that you can do what it is that these athletes are doing. If you give me a football and a helmet and shoulder pads, I can become a football player. If you give me a bat and a ball and gloves, I can become a baseball player. If you give me a basketball and a hoop, I can become a basketball player. But when you start looking at the Winter Olympics, you just need too much stuff. You need snow. I don't have any snow in South Georgia. Then you need, once you have the snow, then you need all this specialized equipment. You need skates, you need skis, you need a bobsled, then not on on top of that, you also need apparently the right geographic elements such as a mountain to ski down. And none of this stuff existed in my world where I grew up at in South Georgia. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Winter Olympics just flat out suck, is that there's nothing about them that's approachable to the average person. Either you're somebody who's going to watch because there's just nothing else on television, or you're truly going to be invested because you have access to these different things that they're highlighting during the Olympic season. During the Winter Olympic season. And it's just really hard to get into it because there's just no way I can connect with it. I've never skied before. I've never had skates. I've never, I've never done any of those things. I've never played hockey, you know. So none of the sports that they feature are approachable to me, you know. And in hindsight, as a kid, I could never be an Olympic athlete. I just wasn't that good of an athlete. Even for the, you know, in terms of the summer game events, but at least I could run, you know. I don't need a special track to run on, right? I can at least challenge and race somebody in my yard as a kid. I don't need, you know, I don't think I need a basketball and a hoop, and I can become a basketball player, right? You know, these games that they have in the summer games are the games that truly are approachable. And I look at the Winter Olympics, and I'm not taking anything away from those athletes and those competitors. But the Winter Olympics are truly a contrived event, and it's just disappointing because it seems like it should be captivating TV. They play the same music, that grand theme that NBC has that they play during the Olympics, but it's not the same product. It's really bad, and I don't know any other way to describe it other than just as being really, really bad. All right. Well, the final bit of this podcast is really the gem of this podcast. As I said earlier, I had a chance to talk with my good friend Hope Williams. She's an LPC, a licensed professional counselor, and she has her own business, her own practice, Smile Project Support Services. And Hope and I had a great conversation talking about dealing with grief, her journey into counseling, and the importance of getting grief counseling when we suffer these moments in our lives that are impactful. And, you know, Hope took a lot of time to sit down and chat with me and just help me understand her vision for what she's trying to do. And she has a real passion and drive for the work that she's doing. And she has two great events that are coming up that she mentions during the interview. And, you know, we want to really be mindful of those events, especially if you're in the Atlanta metro area. And we want to give her our support, not because, she is just looking for, people to show up, but it's because she really is helping people. And she's doing this not only from just a place of entrepreneurship, but it's really a passion and a ministry in a sense for her and what she does. So I can't wait for you guys to hear her story. Hear more about her business and her counseling services that she offers, and we think you're gonna really enjoy this conversation. I am here with Hope Williams, a licensed professional counselor, And Hope and I know each other from Georgia Southern University. Hope is a fellow Georgia Southern Eagle. And she agreed to take some time out of her schedule to talk with me on the Culture and Conversations podcast. Hey, Hope, how are you doing?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. And I saw that you posted, Hope, on Facebook about a company that you started that offers counseling services. And I did not know that you were a professional counselor.
Yes. The reason that you probably did not know is because at Georgia Southern, I was a business marketing major.
Ah.
So definitely would not put the two together as being related career fields, but yes.
So how did you get into counseling, Hope?
So I started, like I said, my undergrad, my bachelor's degree is in business marketing. So I was working for a moving company and kind of doing the business piece that comes along with that, a lot of customer service and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was doing what I needed to do financially, but there was something pulling at me just to do more from a different perspective. Like it wasn't enough. It got to the point where it just was not enough for me to go to work, do that, and go home. So
I know what you mean.
Friend,
no, you're fine.
Yeah, and it's like once that starts happening, it's hard to shake that thought and that feeling.
Yeah, you sound like you wanted to do more meaningful work. That's what it sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah. So I was talking to a friend, another friend from Georgia Southern, and his mom was in the counseling field. And so we were just having the conversation, you know, like you said, I wanted to do more meaningful work, but didn't really know what that looked like.
Mm-hmm.
So had the conversation with him. And after talking to him, he said, you know what, you should go into counseling. And so I toyed around with the idea or whatever. And I found this camp that is hosted 4 times a year. And it's specifically for children who have lost a parent. And so I started volunteering with them. And it was funny because when I called to see if I could even get set up, I wasn't thinking that I would be going that same weekend, but they had a counselor who backed out at the last minute, and the lady was like, I need somebody, can you come?
Oh, wow.
And so I go trucking off, and these camps are held like in the middle of nowhere. So I pull up, and it was like wood cabins and a whole lot of trees, and I was kind of just like, what did I sign up for? And it looked like something out of a scary movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there, and, you know, I prayed about it and said, okay, this is it. So I did that for several camp sessions, and it was good, but it still was not enough.
Okay.
And so I go, oh, I should back up. So the reason that I'm interested in this particular population is because my mom died when I was 6 years old.
Oh, wow.
And so that is kind of what led me to this particular path for more meaningful work. So volunteered with this camp, and like I said, I just kept feeling like there was more that I needed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to push it aside and push it aside. And I knew, like, that life changed after my mom died.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that my life was different from a lot of my friends, because when I was growing up, most of my friends had a two-parent household.
Mm-hmm.
And in middle school, my best friend lost her mom. But it still did not really... It shook me, but I just knew things were different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, dealing with the blending of families and that type of thing, that can be very difficult. But then also, the defining moment for me was when my grandmother died.
Oh, wow.
I went from 6 years old all the way up to 2010, however old I was then. When my grandmother died, I was an adult, and that was my first real exposure to death and what grief feels like.
Okay.
And it was like, at that moment, I realized children are going through this. I struggled as an adult to understand the feelings and the emotions that I was having. And my niece was 6 or 7 at the time that our grandmother died. So for me to experience those emotions and see her at the age that she was, that was what clicked for me.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, in that moment, I realized that I had to do more because there are children who are hurting. And the thing about death, especially when there's a young child involved or if it's unexpected or anything, life still goes on. Affairs have to be handled. And so the surviving adult does what the adult has to do, but sometimes the child gets left behind. And so that was the part that, like, seeing all of that kind of come into play and realizing that that's happening to children every day, that's what got me. And so when my grandmother died, my now husband had to come and let me know at work.
Oh, wow.
It was like a ton of bricks that hit me. And so the response that I had to the news of her death got me sent home. It was like my supervisor realized that I was not going to be any good for the day.
Oh, wow.
And he told me, go ahead and go home and don't come in tomorrow. And so I went home and got myself composed. And the next day I went and applied for graduate school at Mercer to start the counseling program, because it was like through that experience, I realized that there was more that I could be doing. And I felt like I was led from there. I was led to kind of go down this counseling path.
And, you know, what you said there is a story that I think people need to really understand, because, you know, I often get asked by people when I do ministry work that, you know, make sense of why does God do what God does in terms of death and suffering and the things that we tend to have to deal with in our lives that are unpleasant, especially around losing loved ones. And and what I try to explain to people is that God has a way of using these things to produce a good in our lives. But it's all in us trusting him and trying to appreciate those moments when he does put us through those trials and tribulations. And for you to take that moment and use it not as a moment to sort of, you know, lose yourself in grief, but to turn it into a positive, you know, fueling experience to say, hey, I'm going to go and help make a difference in the lives of people. And you went and applied to grad school after that. I mean, I think that's very commendable, because a lot of people, you know, I'm sure you know this from your work that you do. A lot of people just don't process grief well. And as you mentioned, so for you to take that, you know, to go from that moment of losing such a cherished loved one to saying, okay, now I'm going to go help people deal with losing their loved ones. That's just to me, I love that, because that tells me that the work you're doing isn't just for the end result of getting paid, but you're doing it because you actually have a passion for the people that you're helping.
Right. Yep. And it's because it's hard. And like I said, I did not have another significant loss until I was an adult. And I'll never forget pulling up at the funeral home when we had to go and kind of, you know, view her body and make sure that everything was as we wanted it for the service. We pulled up and I was sitting in the back seat. My dad was driving, my stepmother was in the car, and I was in the back by myself, and it was just like something came over me and I was just paralyzed. And I've never felt like that before. And so just once again, seeing my niece at the age that she was and experiencing that, it was just too much. And it was a lot. And so I didn't want to go in the funeral home. It was like I had to kind of talk to myself and say, okay, this is what it is. I have to go through this. And it will be all right. At some point, it's going to be all right, but this is the process that I have to go through. So, yeah, this work definitely comes from a place of understanding and a very personal place.
Wow. So I think, for me, it's funny that I'm having this conversation when I'm having it. Today, I lost one of my first cousins. She passed away. And she's been sick for many years with her diabetes that she had, and you know, she's had many complications over the years as a result of being a diabetic. And you know, when you start talking about grief is a funny thing, because I love my family, I love my cousin, and yet there's people always ask me, well, how do you feel, especially when I lose a loved one, and I'm always, it's always sort of something that's there with me. You know, I know when I lost my grandmother, you know, I had this weird moment, because I was in the funeral home at the wake, and we were sitting there, you know, as a family, looking at the memories of her, you know, being displayed on the television. And I was just sort of there, you know, I was there, I was sitting there thumbing through my phone, Hope, and looking at, you know, at Facebook, right? And, and I was fine. You know, I was fine. I understood my grandmother had been sick and when she had a stroke and, you know, she just wasn't herself anymore. And, you know, I just knew that, you know, okay, this is how this ultimately will end. But when I saw how much my, my family loved my grandmother and how they started crying and, you know, how they started to respond, you know, when, you know, they showed those pictures, and that's what broke me down, you know, and for a moment I was paralyzed because I was like, wow, you know, it's not just, grief isn't just about me. Sometimes, you know, grief is a larger, at least just how I processed it, it was a larger moment. It was about not just how I felt about my grandmother, but it's how I felt about my, my family and how they felt about my grandmother. So, you know, we do oftentimes need help processing grief because, you know, I felt that moment really disconnected from my feelings. And then when I reconnected with them, then that's when I had to make peace with healing and processing it and understanding why I was feeling the way I was feeling.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of times it's easier to avoid things that are happening. And if you can distract yourself, then you don't have to deal with that raw emotion that you know is going to come when you go ahead and confront what's happened.
Exactly.
And that happens a lot. And so, because it is, it's much easier to avoid something than to confront it. If it's something that's uncomfortable or something that's undesirable, we got Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
We have Instagram. We have Twitter. We have all these things that we can use to take our minds off of whatever it is that we don't want to give our attention to at that moment.
Yeah, I was lost in other people's lives, right? And so lost in those moments that I wasn't really aware of, as I should have been, at least empathetic in the moment to what other people were feeling, and then at the same time, what I was feeling. So, you know, that you're absolutely right. I mean,
you're
just
protecting
so,
yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, I think my story is similar to yours. I just hadn't lost anybody in a while, you know, and when you go years, you know, I'm not gonna say it in a bad way, but when you're blessed to go years between deaths, I mean, it just you know, you just don't have the experience and you don't have the quote unquote muscle memory emotionally to deal with it. And sometimes you just don't know how to handle it, you know?
And death isn't one of those things that you really want to get used to. But when you go for such a long time, like you said, you don't have an experience to go back to and say, okay, I know how this will feel. It can come up and knock you straight off your feet.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, while we're talking about your work, you started a company, and your name of your company is the Smile Project Support Services, where you specialize in offering grief counseling for children who have experienced the loss and death of a loved one or a parent. And I wanted to talk to you about that because, you know, you obviously have a heart for the children that you're dealing with in your particular population of focus as a counselor. You know, what are some of the services in terms of counseling and grief management that you offer through the Smile Project Support Services?
So I should start with explaining what Smile is.
Okay.
When I started the organization, well, like I said, I had this conversation and then this decision to go into the counseling field. And I knew that there was a path that I was going to have to go through, a process that I would have to go through in order to be able to get to the point where I am now. So I went to school, finished the degree, and then I had to do 3 years in the field before I could become licensed and do this on my own. And all along, I knew that I didn't want to work under anybody else as far as this was concerned.
Okay.
I have a job, you know, I have a full-time job. I work for somebody else, but this is mine. And I wanted to make sure that it remained mine, or that it was always mine, so that I could do what I was called to do. So with that being said, I was finishing up the beginning, or getting started with the beginning of my directed experience, which is the time that's after graduation but before I could practice on my own.
Okay.
So I did what's called an informational interview with a lady at one of the local community service boards, talking to her about what the options are in the field, what my passion was or is, and kind of how I could go about doing that. And she was very seasoned, very knowledgeable, and very, very helpful. So that night I was driving around for my job, because at that time I was a core service provider, which means that I was going into the homes of my clients. Once it was still children and adolescents, but I was going into their homes instead of them coming to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving around kind of contemplating how I got to this point, because it has not been a smooth or easy transition by any means.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving around working this job that I was barely getting paid for, driving out gas that did not get reimbursed.
Mm.
And I'm just in the car like, God, is this really what you told me to do?
Mm.
And so it was almost as though somebody was in the car talking to me, and I heard him say, significant moments impact lives eternally.
Wow.
And that's what SMILES stands for.
Significant moments.
I couldn't have come up with those words.
Impact lives.
Significant moments impact lives eternally.
Wow.
And so for me, my significant moment was my mother's death and my grandmother's death.
Mm-hmm.
And it has impacted me in ways that I'm still discovering.
Wow.
Last weekend marked 28 years since my mother died. There's nothing in life that, for me, has lasted longer than her absence.
Wow.
And even after 28 years, I still had to go in the bathroom and cry and cry and cry. And I just had to allow myself that moment in that time to deal with what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like I said, for me, those were my significant moments.
Wow.
But it may not be death for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But we all have significant moments that we have to figure out how to deal with and how to process and how to handle and how to move on from without the moment defining us.
Wow.
And so for me and for Smile Project, it's about acknowledging those moments and then having it be a part of us but not be us.
Oh, okay.
And so because of that, I do, like I said, my primary passion and my reason for doing what I'm doing is because I know there are children out there who are now like I was back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that in order to become a healthy and functioning adult, there are some things that have to be handled and there are some things that have to be dealt with. And my role is to help these children and also help their parents understand that there's work that has to be done. It's not something that can just be brushed under the rug. And the it could be the death. It could be divorce. It could be incarceration. It
mm-hmm.
could be social anxiety. It could be bullying at school. And it's interesting because, like I said, I've had a rough counseling, not rough. It hasn't been terrible, but it's been very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked in homes. I worked at a psychiatric facility an acute psychiatric facility for children and adults. And then as well as I've done private practice in the past, and then also worked at a residential facility for children, psychiatric facility. And so there I saw the children, they were there, like they lived there until their treatment was done. It wasn't like a week or two and then they go home. That was where they were. So that was very interesting. But when I was doing the work with the kids in their homes, that's when I started to be able to make more connections as far as like behavioral issues and that type of thing, and seeing trends or similarities.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason that I mentioned divorce and incarceration is because that's still a loss. My loss was a physical death.
Sure.
But there's children who are going back and forth between parents because of divorce. Some of them are only with one parent because of divorce. Some experience abandonment. Incarceration, of course, is something that the child has no control over, but they're still dealing with that as a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very interesting to me that with the kids who were dealing with and having an incarcerated parent and divorced parents,
mm-hmm.
and also single family homes, single parent homes, they had behaviors, they displayed behaviors, problematic behaviors that were similar to children who experienced the physical death of a parent.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so it's like being in those different situations and exposed to different populations kind of gave me a chance to see children in their world and in their, you know, in their comfortable place, natural place.
And I think what you're hitting on there about how significant moments impact lives eternally, you know, we don't realize that as adults, oftentimes we are expressing behaviors, we're expressing patterns of activity in our lives that tie back to those moments when we were children where we experienced loss, where we experienced mm-hmm. very, you know, impactful situations, and we don't understand sometimes that those things materialize themselves in our lives as adults. You know, I've got a number of friends who have loved ones who have lost family members, or were, you know, had, you know, family members incarcerated, or, you know, lost, you know, had their homes disrupted by, you know, divorce, the things that you mentioned. And you're absolutely mm-hmm. right. Not saying this in a judgmental fashion, but you're absolutely right when you say that these things affect them, because there are certain things that have happened to them that I'm certain tie back to those moments, you know. And I've had friends who have witnessed the murder of their parents, you know, the murder of a loved one, you know, by one of their parents, you know. I've got friends who have children who, you know, who have, you know, lost connection with their fathers because, you know, they've been incarcerated for various things. And
mm-hmm.
and that trauma, if it's not managed and handled, it does create these behavioral problems and these patterns that you see in us as adults. And I think that's the reason why it's so important to embrace the kind of work that you're doing. And I say that from a consumer standpoint, because, you know, we need to address these things in our lives because they do follow us into our adulthood. And we pass these things on to our children when we express those behaviors either in front of them or in some cases directed at them. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I never forget my father. He told me about how my grandfather disciplined him one time as a child. And when that moment came up, or a similar moment came up where he had an opportunity to discipline me and my brother, you know, he expressed a similar style of discipline towards us. And, you know, my father loves me, but my father was telling me that this thing that he did towards us came from how he was raised, and so mm-hmm. on and so forth. And like you said, that was an impactful moment that lasted, you know, with him throughout his whole life, you know. And I think we just have to continue to encourage people to embrace ideas, you know, around like counseling, and especially to in the population you're working with the children, because, you know, children do become adults, and these problems in our society, they often stem from people just not getting the help they needed when the moment happened, or following the moment when it happened. So, you know, that's why I'm really excited about what you're doing with your company. I like that, you know, significant moments impact lives eternally. I feel like that's a sermon for me if I ever get back in the pulpit again. I was going to ask you some more questions and just talk to you about some of the things that you've got going on with Smile. You've got an event coming up that you've got planned. Tell me about the name of your event, and let's talk about when the actual event is as well.
Okay. So there's two things that I have coming up. The first one is a 6-week group experience that will start on March 3rd, and we will meet for 3 consecutive Saturdays, skip the Saturday, March 24th, and then wrap up with the final 3 sessions.
Okay.
And that is a narrative-based group. It's a narrative therapy-based approach to handling grief, being able to deal with grief. And we will be meeting in at the office where I do private practice, which is in Atlanta, well, Marietta area, Windy Hill and Powers Ferry Road.
Okay.
So we'll be meeting over there, doing that group experience to help children and teens kind of process through this grief. And the reason that I'm bringing that up is, A, because it is coming up soon, and I want to make sure that I'm reaching as many kids and families as possible to make that available.
Okay.
And I think that it's going to be a very impactful group. The book that we are going to be using for the narrative the curriculum is based on a book, but it involves a lot of play therapy and interactive work, which I'm really excited about. And the book and workbook were co-authored by two of the counseling professors at Mercer. They were asked to do, in response to the some traumatic incidents in Haiti, they were asked to do this group. And then they went and did training with people in Haiti, and then they've taken it to other countries since then, so that the group can be facilitated by someone locally. And so I did a Zumba party last year and sent the information over to Mercer, and the professor wrote me back and said, hey, I really want to talk to you about this group. I want to do it here locally. Would you be interested? So I went and met with them, and just as a side note, the Zumba party was to get people active. Exercise and physical activity is something that can greatly improve or increase, help your mood. And so that was my reason for that being my first community event. So we had, it was a Zumbathon, and it was just a way to get people moving and get people paying attention to mental health and doing things that would positively impact their mental health. So in response to that, the professor emailed me, and I did the training on facilitating this group. So I'm expecting it to be a very, very beneficial group and something that will create another significant moment in the lives of the participants. Because like I said before, for me, it's about acknowledgement and not avoiding what has happened, but acknowledging it, embracing it, and getting the tools to be able to make that be a part of their story without being their story. So that's the first thing I've got coming up, and that's starting March 3rd.
Okay.
And then on May 12th, I'm doing a tea. And this is the first annual tea that will be hosted by Smile Project.
Okay.
And it's Mother's Day weekend, but I'm not calling it a Mother's Day tea. It's called A Celebration of Girls and the Women They Love. And the reason that it's not a Mother's Day tea is because I don't want anyone to feel that they cannot come if they can't come with their mother.
I got you.
So this is intended to just really be a time of celebration, a time to show appreciation, and also a time to remember the women who have impacted our lives. And so that is the purpose behind the tea, and that's going to be held at the Smyrna Community Center.
Okay.
On May 12th at 3:30. But it's really intended to be just a time of celebration. It's going to be fancy. It's going to be beautiful. But I really, my ultimate goal is for it to be inclusive. And of course, that's going back to my personal experience. Like I said, from 6 years old, I didn't talk about my mom until I got to college.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who knew me knew my dad. They knew about my dad if they didn't know him personally. But they never knew really about my mom because I purposely did not talk about it.
Okay.
I didn't talk about her death. I just couldn't. And so doing something for Mother's Day was just off limits for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another one of those things that is kind of like, I know what that feels like to have that desire to be able to talk about it, but it's socially taboo. But the thing is, it's not as uncommon. Like I said, I had one friend who lost her mom in middle school,
mm-hmm.
but it's estimated that 1 in 20 children will lose a parent before they turn 18.
Oh, wow.
So there's a population of kids who need this, and they need this inclusion and this normalization, but it's not talked about.
Mm-hmm. I think those are two great events. And with these type of group events, I think that's going to be a very approachable way for people to begin to open themselves up to counseling and, you know, seeking an opportunity to, like you said, embrace those moments and get help processing those moments. One of the things that, we deal with oftentimes in the African-American community is that we have a tendency not to make ourselves available to the, to counseling. Yeah, part of our culture is to not talk about our problems, and or mm-hmm. or you talk
pray about it.
Exactly, pray about it. We talk about it with people who we tell not to tell nobody else, who all they do is go and tell other people anyway. And you know, we have this cultural mindset, and you know, yeah. And as a man of faith, I support people praying, but I'll share a personal story that will support what you're talking about. Hope is that, you know, me, you know, I'm a divorcee. I went through a divorce in 2014 that, you know, at least that's when it was finalized, but it really lasted. 'Cause anybody who goes through a divorce, they'll tell you that it really lasts a lot longer than it takes for it to get through the court. And, you know, so, you know, I went through that really beginning around 2000, really around the end of 2012 and going all the way through 2013. And then it finally ended up around February 2014. And, you know, in that moment, I thought, okay, as soon as the divorce is over, I'll be the old Jameson again, right? I'll be the old person I used to be. The emotions, all the stress, all of the, you know, headaches, they'll be gone, right? And mm-hmm. what I realized was, no, all that stuff lingered, and
yeah,
you know, I had to have a very real conversation with myself, because, you know, I said, okay, I'm gonna take my time about dating. I'm gonna take my time about meeting people and getting back out here, quote unquote, and back into the game or whatever. But I realized a couple things about the things that you mentioned earlier, about how people can feel displaced, how people can feel alienated and not a part of the community that they're actually, you know, they actually are in, like children. You know, I felt displaced. All my friends were married. They were working on having kids, or they were working on more kids, and they were just at a different place in life. And I felt completely ripped out of that social circle. And once I realized that I felt that alienation, then I had to deal with, okay, now I've got to kind of get back into this, mixed in with these people who have moved on with their lives, and at least socially and where they're progressing to. And then, you know, mm-hmm. I had to deal with questions from people. Oh, well, where's your wife at? Well, you know, I got divorced. You know, okay, well, you know, now every time I saw somebody who hadn't seen me since then, I had to explain to them that I'm not married anymore. And, you know, what? Well, you know, and the next question, because we don't stop at just, you know, where's your wife? We go to the next level. Well, what happened? You know, and
what happened?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to your point, a lot of these same questions, I'm sure, are asked of people, unfortunately, when they're going through grief. And me, I just wanted I wanted to mourn that part of my life in private. And I didn't have the opportunity to, really, because I had to face the world, and I couldn't just sit there and pretend it didn't happen. I had to, as you say, embrace it. So one of the things I did to embrace that reality that I lived in was that I went to counseling, and I started counseling. And it concluded, thankfully, this year. And I had a wonderful counselor, wonderful therapist, who just kind of kept it real with me. You know, she helped me identify from my cultural perspective. She also helped me to, you know, kind of process what I was feeling, what I was thinking. She also helped me, you know, one of the things I thought about with therapy / counseling was that I was going to feel weird, but actually... and I hear it in your voice, and hear it in how you're dealing with, you know, the children that you help. She actually helped me feel like normal. Like, hey, you weren't weird for feeling that, or you're not crazy for thinking the way that you were thinking, or, you know, the way you handled that situation is actually quite common. And just realizing that, okay, that I am normal, and that I just need to develop better tools and mechanisms for dealing with these different feelings and emotions that I have. And also that, you know what, I had done good things in getting to the point where I was at with, you know, with pursuing counseling. But then I also developed some better skills along the way, because I got exposed to the techniques. I got exposed to the alternative perspective, other than just, you know, the voice in my head telling me what I should and shouldn't do. And it really helped me see myself differently, and not only see myself, but it helped me see the other people in my life differently that I love and care about. So, you know, I think that's my shameless plug for you and what you do with Smile, is that I want people who hear this to understand that, you know, in our community, especially if they're a part of the African-American community, that counseling and therapy aren't things that are negatives, but they are very positive and powerful tools that we are blessed and fortunate to have people who look like us and understand our cultural experience, you know, practicing these skills and these tools to help us deal with the things that we have going on in our lives emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's hearing what you said, I'm reminded that society defines for us how we respond to things and what's normal and what's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so going through a divorce and then feeling like you have to explain what happened, society doesn't make it okay to say the marriage is no longer, period. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
And you, it sounds like you felt that pressure that you had to justify why it was no more. And that shouldn't be anyone else's call to make.
No, that's true. And you're so right about speaking about that from a societal position, because, you know, I'm involved in my church community. I'm very active in my church community, and things like divorce, and to make it back, you know, to bring it back into what you're talking about in grief counseling, things like divorce and death inside of our church communities have a very specific context that we sort of look at things in. And it oftentimes creates moments and situations where it's very difficult for the person who's dealing with the issue or dealing with that loss that they just suffered, whether it's through a marriage, you know, coming to an end, or it's through the death of a loved one. We can't hide. We have to process it in the open, you know, and deal mm-hmm. with these people and how they see it and what they're imposing upon us. Because I will say I won't be cynical and say that people, you know, were asking me about my divorce because they were just being nosy. I think there were some people being nosy, but not everybody. And
of course there's going to be.
But I do know that, you know, in that a lot of people thought they were being offering help and perspective and advice. And obviously I appreciate those things, but those things weren't replacements for, you know, the help of a therapist in the end. And I'm glad I got that help, because, you know, it's important to have people who know how to recognize patterns like you're describing, you know, behavior issues. And also, in your particular case, the empathy you have for those types of, you know, experiences, because you've lived one yourself, you've lived a couple that you described yourself. It really helps.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps to have that other ear who's trained and understands exactly how you're feeling it and why you're feeling the way that you're feeling.
Yeah. And I am glad that I've always been empathetic and I've always had a heart for children. And that's, like I was saying before, what took me to volunteer to go spend my weekends sleeping in a log cabin,
mm-hmm.
showering with cold water. Because I wanted to be able to pour into the lives of these children in whatever way I could. And so being able to get the professional training to go along with that empathetic heart has been very beneficial. I had the honor of working with a little boy who recently experienced the death of his dad. And so we had met for several times, maybe even a couple months by that point. And he was doing really good work, but he started to kind of plateau.
Okay.
And he wasn't resistant. Like, he would still come, and he would still engage, and he would still do his thing. But one particular session, he asked me, has anybody you love ever died? And that's when I was able to share with him the reason why I was sitting there with him. And it was like he was able to connect with me because he understood. And even in his young age, very young, and it was like he needed that to know that I wasn't just talking to him. I wasn't just telling him something that I did not know to be true. I wasn't just talking about feelings that I've never experienced. He needed to know that I was coming from a place of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
He knew, I believe he knows that I care about him and that I want to be able to help him, but he needed to know that I get it. And
that
of course,
full of
I'm
crap.
Not going to, yeah, then I'm just not, you know, just acting like I understand And here he is in the middle of this grief process. Like, he wants to know why. He wants to know why is he feeling like this. And we got to a point where we were able to kind of compare his feelings at the current moment with when he first started. And one of, like you said, normal was one of the words that he used.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he was looking for in the beginning. He didn't feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
His situation didn't feel normal. But when things like this happen, we call it a new normal. You have to find your new normal and figure out how to work with what is.
Exactly.
It's something that you can't change. You can't change the fact now that the divorce has happened. And I'm sure that there's opportunities or experiences that left when the marriage left.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't change the fact that now you're going to miss those things, but you have to be able to move on and say, okay, this is where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I can do to still be and be okay. And so it's like, it's a journey.
It is. It is.
It's truly a journey.
I know that, you know, one of the things I was telling my mother when we were talking about my cousin who passed away is that, you know, we make sense of these things, you know, from my different cultural perspectives. Like I said, I'm a person of faith. I'm a Christian. So, you know, I was telling her, I said, you know, my cousin has been sick for, you know, nearly 3 decades, you know, with mm-hmm. different issues with her, you know, her diabetes. And while it's hard for me to be, you know, perfectly fine with the fact that she's not here anymore, you know, right now in this moment where it's all so new and so fresh, I can also appreciate the fact that she's not suffering anymore, you know, mm-hmm. And that gives me a degree of peace and understanding about it all that makes me feel, you know, some relief and some sense of understanding about it all. And I said that in because you mentioned, we were talking about, you know, divorce and in particular me going through divorce, you know, I knew I was better and starting to truly heal when I was happy, when I was happy for the well-being of my ex, you know, my ex-spouse. And, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I tried to really hope take that mindset with every disappointment when people let me down or when situations, you know, people are unable to meet the expectation in those situations to help me deal with the grief of that disappointment. I tried to approach it as, okay, well, this person, you know, what's better for this person? You know, what is it that this person, you know, needed that they weren't able to get from either from me or from the situation that we were in together. And, mm-hmm. You know, once I started really trying to be more optimistic about the outcome and look at it from a perspective of, you know, okay, well, this person had to pursue what was best for them and being happy that they had the freedom and the capability of pursuing what was best for them, even if that meant that I wasn't going to be a part of that, of their story, then that freed mm-hmm. me up so much from a lot of the tension, the tightness, the grudge holding, the, you know, just all of the things, the negative emotions that oftentimes impact you going forward. And, you know, I'm not going to say every day I get that right with every relationship and friendship or acquaintance, but I strive for that. And because of that, I really have been fortunate and blessed to see, you know, that I was able to move and grow from those things and that they became mm-hmm. a part of me, but they didn't define me. And I was so happy with that.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right when you start talking about, you know, just how it all feels when you lose someone. And, you know, I'm glad that there are people like you who are out in this world, you know, being not only entrepreneurial, but also trying to have entrepreneurship that empowers and helps people, not purely for, you know, the sake of the end result of making money. Like, you actually have a mission behind what you're doing with the Smile Project mm-hmm. and the services that you guys offer. You know, I want to, you know, just kind of bring the podcast to a conclusion, or at least this portion of it, and just ask you a question that may help somebody. You know how can people make themselves open to the idea of pursuing help with with their grief. You know, what should people do to make themselves open to what you to services like yours, so that they can get the help that they need?
Well, in addition to grief, just everyday life stressors, and like I said, every daily significant moments sometimes have to be dealt with. And I think the first part of that is acknowledgement and getting to a point of deciding that something has to change. And okay. So my suggestion or my advice would be that if you find yourself in a place where things aren't right, or you feel like things are changing and they're not in such a good way, or you may just need a tune up. Mm-hmm. Seek help.
Okay.
And it's like you said, it's therapy and counseling, especially in the Black community, is a very, very taboo topic. It's not something that's common. It's becoming more common,
mm-hmm.
thankfully. It's becoming more common and more acceptable, but sometimes it's required, it's necessary to go against what is considered normal or what's considered acceptable or regular. We have to sometimes go against that in order to get what we need for ourselves. And so my encouragement is to pay attention to what is going on with your personal life. And mm-hmm. you mentioned interactions with other people were relationships that you were able to judge your progress or gauge your progress from. Mm-hmm. If you start seeing changes in interactions or in your relationships, even if it's not changes, you don't see any growth, talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And counseling is not something that you have to advertise that you're doing. You can go and, like I tell my daughter, I have a 3-year-old, and she wants to tell everybody everything. She fell and scraped her leg, and she wanted to go to school and tell everybody. And I'm saying, babe, you don't have to tell everything.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff you can just do. We bandaged it up. We took care of it. We can do that and keep it between me and you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the expectation with a counselor. Your counselor is not there to listen to what you have going on and then go tell their sister, their mom, their grandma. That's not what their role is. Their
exactly.
role is to be there for you. And so you don't have to feel pressured to disclose that you're seeking help.
Exactly.
But like you said, hopefully the experience will be such that it will become a testimony or a testament to the benefit of therapeutic services.
Yeah,
that's the long answer to your question. I'm sorry.
No, that's
sorry,
perfect.
Rambling.
No. That's perfect. You know, that's the nice thing about, you know, having your own, you know, podcasting platform, your own media platform, if you will, is that I can take people like yourself who are doing awesome work, you know, and take you and give you as much time as you need to share, you know, and express yourself. Because I want people to get help. Like that's something I didn't even see coming from the podcasting. I didn't realize that not only was I going to tell stories and help people tell their story on the podcast, but that it would turn into conversations that would bless people and, you know, share stories that help people, you know, like this. Like I never, when you approached me and, you know, when you approached me about doing, you know, or at least when I approached you, I should say, and reached out and said, hey, I think you can be helpful. I can be helpful to you in advertising your events and talking about your business. I never expected such a thoughtful, in-depth conversation around issues of counseling and grief management and dealing with loss. And this is why I love what I do with the Culture and Conversations podcast. And I just appreciate you, Hope, taking time to be a part of it and to allow me to partner with you and present your business and your services to as many people as we can get it out to.
I appreciate you reaching out because I've been making the post and just hoping that somebody would see and take note, and you did, and I appreciate you for reaching out and saying, hey, I think I can help. Here's what I can do.
So before we wrap up completely, Hope, What is your website? What's your social media? How can people get in touch with the Smile Project Support Services?
My website is smileprojectempowers.com. And it's also Smile Project Empowers on Facebook. And then on Instagram, it's just Smile Project.
Okay. And I'm going to make a note of that so I can put that in the show notes.
Okay. And then I can be reached via email at info@smileprojectempowers.com.
Okay. That's perfect.
And just to, now this is my shameless plug. So
plug away.
These events, the group that I'm doing, I host these events. The Zumba party, the Zumbathon was like a fundraiser slash community awareness type of event. And the purpose of it was to, like I said, get people kind of paying attention to their mental health and realizing that they can contribute to a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
The proceeds from the Zumbathon went to Smile Project. I have to, of course, pay to rent space to host the groups, mm-hmm. rent space to do the counseling services and all of that. And so I occasionally do these events to raise money so that the cost is kind of offset from the parents who are signing up to bring their kids. So I am saying all of that to say that if someone listening wants to help but does not have an avenue like you do or have a child that they feel needs the services, you can always make an investment and know that that is going toward helping the kids in an indirect, well, really it's in a direct way because it offsets the cost of the groups. Usually counseling groups might cost upwards of $150, $200.
Okay.
And so what I'm doing is greatly reduced in cost so that finances will not be a barrier for children who need to participate.
Wow.
I mailed letters and flyers to, it was all the schools in Cobb County.
Mm-hmm.
And postage keeps going up, but I need to be able to get the word out. And so it's a cost that's incurred to do the group, but it needs to be done. So if you have a desire to make a contribution, definitely know that it will go toward helping kids who need it.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, that's something we need to get behind and, we need to do more of. You know, these things are a part of our community. These are resources that are part of our community. And I wish people, and I hope people take advantage of them. You know, one of the things that's really important, and I can't stress that enough as you leave us with that plug, is that, you know, we need people who understand our culture as much as the clinical or in the technical aspects of counseling, because there are things that you can speak to with the intimacy of being a part of the culture that you can't get from other counseling providers because they just don't know what it's like to live in your world. And, you know, mm-hmm. so, you know, supporting these things is important, you know, as part of us building and strengthening our community as a people, is that we need to have people that we need to invest in the good in our people, you know. And, you know, when we have people who are doing great work, trying to make a difference in our lives, then we need to be supportive of it. And obviously, you know, help continue that work. And making a donation and an investment into what you're doing to make it so, you know, like so that it's cheaper for other people, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm gonna see what I can do with my personal money, and you know, see if we can't put some dollars behind our activism, and I want to be a part of that. So I'm on record on the podcast. I'm gonna do something. I don't know what, but I'm gonna do something financial to help with the Smile Project.
Well, this has been a tremendous help just being able to do this podcast. Like I said, I really, really appreciate you and your willingness to help me get the word out. And like we touched on earlier, this is about breaking cycles because we as adults do what we know and what we've learned as children.
Exactly.
And so unless there is something that comes along to stop the negative cycle, of course, there are things that we've been taught and things that we've learned throughout life that will take us far. But there are some things that we just do because that's what we know to do. And it's things like that that we have to have some type of intervention to kind of change the course. And that's what counseling does for a lot of kids is give that support that's needed to help when things are thrown off a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Hope, you take care, and we will talk again soon.
All right. Thank you.
And that brings to a close this episode of the Culture and Conversations podcast. I'm so glad Hope Williams of the Smile Project Support Services stopped by. Smile. Significant moments impact lives eternally. Such a great name for a counseling service helping children dealing with grief and loss. Please be sure to support what Hope has going on. And as the host of the Culture and Conversations podcast, I'm going to do my best to try to support what she has going on as well. I am so glad to be able to make this next statement. I love this music that we got a license for from Sound Resort Studios. Old friend, old acquaintance from Georgia Southern University, Dwayne Kelly, Dwayne DK Kelly, laced me with this wonderful beat. I got a couple more too, so be sure to check out Sound Resort Studios and see what they have to offer in terms of recording services, instrumentals, beats. If you're an aspiring artist, Dwayne DK Kelly is the man to see. If you want to stay in touch with the podcast, check us out, Culture and Conversations. That's the Facebook page. Culture and Conversations. That's the IG handle, Instagram handle. CultureandConversations@gmail.com. That is the email address. I am your host, Jameson Smallwood. Thank you for listening and contributing and being a part of the conversation. And don't let the conversation stop here.